3, 2, 1, lift off.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Welcome to the end of the History of the Space Race podcast. Epilogue, the Apollo-Soyuz Test Project. In 1975, 3 years after the last manned mission to the moon, the Soviet Union and the United States launched the first joint manned space mission ever, the Apollo-Soyuz Test Project. For NASA and the United States, this mission was also the very last of the Apollo missions. The origins of the Apollo-Soyuz mission can be traced all the way back to the early 1960s. On February 20, 1962, John Glenn became the third American in space and the first American to fly on an orbital flight in Friendship 7. This achievement finally resembled something on par to the orbital flight of Yuri Gagarin in Vostok 1 and German Titov in Vostok 2. In the aftermath of the Friendship 7 mission, Premier Nikita Khrushchev sent a letter of congratulations to President Kennedy. The letter also suggested that the Soviet Union and the United States cooperate in outer space. President Kennedy, who was interested in bringing about some sort of détente with the Soviet Union, sent a reply letter agreeing that the two nations should explore the possibility of cooperation in space. The result was that representatives of the Soviet Union and the United States met at the sidelines of committee meetings on outer space hosted by the United Nations in Vienna. Professor Anatoly Blagonravov represented the Soviet Union, and NASA Deputy Administrator Hugh Dryden represented the United States. By about June of 1962, the two sides negotiated a tentative memorandum of understanding for cooperation in space. The agreement would become known as the Blagonravov-Dryden Agreement. The kind of cooperation described by the Blagonravov-Dryden Agreement, however, was quite limited. The agreement reflected plans to exchange data from weather satellites and to cooperating in mapping the Earth's magnetic field. None of this really required the two nations to work together beyond exchanging information. Genuine cooperation between the Soviet Union and the United States was difficult in the early 1960s due to the political circumstances. For one thing, the two nations were at the height of the Cold War. Indeed, just 4 months after tentatively drafting the Blagonravov-Dryden Agreement, the Cuban Missile Crisis began in October 1962. This led to the suspension of all cooperation in space. Although cooperation was later restored, the incident reflected the difficulties of attempting deeper cooperation. Another factor inhibiting genuine cooperation was the space race. President Kennedy had issued an open challenge to land men on the moon first. While the race was still going, any genuine cooperation would be difficult, as resources might have to be drawn away from the main effort to land on the moon, and any sensitive information shared could compromise victory in the race. Although President Kennedy had pushed for more genuine cooperation in space, going so far as to reiterate his offer for a joint moon landing effort during a speech at the United Nations in September 1963. His assassination just a few months later in November 1963 put an abrupt end to these efforts. Khrushchev, who shortly before Kennedy's assassination had suggested he was open to a joint moon landing effort, was himself removed from power in October 1964, firmly closing the door on any genuine cooperation from both sides of the Cold War. The conditions for cooperation began to improve in 1969. In March 1969, Thomas O. Paine became the third NASA administrator, picking up from the great James Webb. The appointment of Administrator Paine was important to the eventual development of the Apollo-Soyuz test project. Paine had always believed that NASA should be seeking closer cooperation with the Soviet Union. He had persistently made overtures to the Soviet Union prior to becoming administrator, but he didn't have much luck. But the situation changed after 1969. In July 1969, Apollo 11 landed the first men on the moon. With NASA having achieved its primary goal, more resources could now be freed up for genuine international cooperation in other projects. And the Apollo 11 landing itself made more manageable the sense of competition between the two nations. One big question for Paine, however, was what the Soviet Union and the United States should actually try to do if they were to collaborate. In late 1969 and 1970, NASA gave consideration to the possibilities. In general, the thought was that collaboration should extend beyond mere exchange of scientific data. For example, the two nations should try to develop common flight procedures for navigation and rendezvous, and experiment with space rescue capabilities through the development of a common docking system. This last proposal for a common docking system was actually influenced in part by the Oscar-winning movie Marooned, which was first released in November 1969, just a few months after Apollo 11. Spoiler alert for anyone interested in watching the movie. I'm going to give a quick synopsis. Marooned was a movie about an Apollo command module with the call sign Iron Man 1 that could not fire its retro rockets to re-enter the atmosphere. As a result, three astronauts are stranded in Earth orbit. As NASA rushes to launch a rescue mission, the astronauts inside Iron Man 1 are running out of oxygen. As oxygen starts to run low, the three astronauts don their spacesuits. Then one astronaut exits Iron Man 1 in an attempt to save his fellow crew members. That was when a Soviet Voskhod spacecraft shows up. Unable to dock with Iron Man 1 and too small to carry any of the astronauts as passengers, the cosmonaut aboard the Voskhod spacecraft can do nothing more than provide oxygen to keep the astronauts alive. When NASA's rescue ship finally shows up, the cosmonaut aboard Voskhod shines a light upon the astronaut who left Iron Man 1 to help with the rescue. The astronauts are then retrieved and the Vashod and the NASA rescue ship each engage in retrofire and go home. The movie Marooned highlighted the problems that could arise if there was a serious malfunction with a spacecraft that did not immediately kill the astronauts. Indeed, NASA itself had fretted over this very possibility. Remember that one of the major fears behind Lunar Orbital Rendezvous was that if the lunar module failed to rendezvous with the command module, or if they failed to dock, two astronauts could be stranded in lunar orbit, lasting days and dying a very slow death. The movie Marooned pointed out that there were many possibilities and scenarios where astronauts could be saved if there were internationally recognized rescue procedures and universally compatible equipment. In October 1970, after numerous informal communications between NASA and the Soviet Academy of Sciences, Administrator Payne received a letter indicating an interest in cooperation of some sort on a space project. The Nixon administration, for its part, gave Administrator Payne free rein to cooperate with the Soviet Union so long as any activities were limited to outer space. As discussions between NASA and the Soviet Union continued, they came to focus on the development of a universal docking system. The plan was to have an Apollo command module and a Soyuz spacecraft dock in Earth orbit. The mission would eventually become known as the Apollo-Soyuz Test Project. A series of technical discussions took place in 1971, with Soviet engineers flying to the United States to visit NASA facilities, and in a surprising show of openness, NASA engineers visited Star City inside the Soviet Union, just outside of Moscow. Star City was where the Soviet Union had its cosmonaut training center. These technical discussions led to plans for a docking ring known as the Androgynous Peripheral Attachment System, or APAS. So, to understand the importance of the androgynous system, I need to back up a bit and describe how docking systems worked generally before the development of these plans. Before the Apollo-Soyuz test project, the Soviet Union and the United States used what was known as a probe and drogue docking system. This system required each spacecraft to have a different docking ring. One side would have the probe, and the other side would have the drogue. The probe was a structure, usually a cone of some sort, that jutted out from the spacecraft, while the drogue side would be some sort of depressed receptacle that could accept the probe, usually some sort of concave shape. For reasons that I hope are obvious, the probe side was often referred to as the male side of the docking system, and the drogue side was often referred to as the female side of the docking system. Typically, the probe would be attached to the active vehicle for docking, meaning the spacecraft that was maneuvering into position to dock. The probe and drogue system presented a problem in scenarios where astronauts or cosmonauts had to be rescued, such as the one depicted in the movie Marooned. Even if there was a spare spacecraft available for launch to perform some sort of rescue, The spare spacecraft may not have the correct side of the docking system attached to enable a docking and rescue. The androgynous peripheral attachment system was designed so that either spacecraft could dock with the other, and either spacecraft could serve as the active or passive vehicle. To do this, each docking port would have a set of latches on an outside ring. As the two docking ports approached, the set of latches on each port would clamp down like a set of intermeshing fingers. The docking port, however, was far from being the only technical issue that had to be resolved before an Apollo command module and a Soyuz spacecraft could dock. One other significant technical hurdle was the air. As I mentioned in episode 52 on the Apollo 1 fire, NASA had opted for a pure oxygen environment pressurized to about 1/3 atmosphere inside the command module. The Soviet Union, on the other hand, had chosen an environment that mimicked the air on Earth, with a nitrogen and oxygen mixture pressurized to 1 atmosphere. As a result, if an Apollo and Soyuz spacecraft docked and simply opened the hatch, the air inside Soyuz would rush into the Apollo spacecraft. Both spacecraft would likely suffer some sort of damage, not to mention that anything not tied down inside the Soyuz would find its way into the Apollo spacecraft. The only way to resolve this issue without a complete redesign of one or both spacecraft was to design and develop an airlock. Transfer between the Apollo and Soyuz spacecraft would require an intervening third compartment that could be pressurized and depressurized to varying levels. Even with an airlock, however, the Soviet Union had to make some modifications to the Soyuz spacecraft. Specifically, the Soyuz had to be modified so that it could maintain a slightly lower cabin pressure during the docking phase. This became known as the Soyuz 7K-TM. In total, the Soviet Union constructed 6 of these Soyuz 7K-TM. 2 were used for unmanned test flights, 1 was for a crewed test mission, 2 were reserved as backups, and 1 was used for the actual mission. During the technical discussions between NASA and the Soviet Union, there was one issue that nearly tanked the entire docking mission: Soyuz 11. As I mentioned in episode 75, Soyuz 11 was the first crewed mission that successfully boarded the Soviet space station Salyut 1. Launched on June 6, 1971, the crew of Soyuz 11, Georgi Dobrovsky, Vladislav Volkov, and Viktor Patsayev, stayed in orbit on and off the space station for about 24 days. When Soyuz 11 returned home, however, all 3 astronauts were found dead inside the spacecraft. This was a real problem, since the American astronauts already tended to look down on the Soyuz spacecraft as being inferior to the Apollo. Now, with the accident, there were fears that the Soyuz was just not a reliable spacecraft. If some mechanical problem occurred during the docking mission, the astronauts could be putting their own lives at risk. As a result, NASA pressed the Soviet Union for details of what happened on Soyuz 11. Initially, the Soviet Union refused to disclose what had happened. They gave half explanations and assurances that the problem would not happen again, and certainly not during the Apollo-Soyuz docking mission. Only when it became clear that NASA would not proceed with the mission without a full explanation did the Soviet Union finally disclose that an air valve had prematurely opened while Soyuz 11 was still in orbit. With this explanation and assurances that the problem had been identified and fixed, NASA agreed to move on with the planning. By April 1972, the technical discussions between NASA and the Soviet Union had advanced enough that the two sides committed their effort to paper. The agreement was signed to launch the Apollo-Soyuz test project sometime in 1975. For the first time in history, two nations would meet in space to cooperate in engineering and scientific ventures. The timing of the mission had benefits for both sides. In the United States, the Apollo moon landings were set to end by December 1972. The Skylab program would also be over by 1973 or 1974. So a launch in 1975 would keep providing NASA with operations in space while it waited for the development of the space shuttle, which by now was far behind schedule and was not expected until 1980. Meanwhile, the Soviet Union was hoping that its Earth orbital space station would be complete by 1975, and the demonstration of a universal docking port in Earth orbit would further demonstrate that the two nations had some sort of parity in outer space after the Apollo moon landings. To command the Apollo spacecraft for this historic mission, Deke Slayton of NASA's astronaut office chose Thomas Stafford. By now, Stafford was quite the veteran and had particular experience with rendezvous and docking missions. He had flown on Gemini 6A, which participated in the first rendezvous of two manned spacecraft with Gemini 7. He had also flown on Gemini 9A, which had attempted a docking with the augmented docking target adapter, though that mission had failed. He was then the commander of Apollo 10, the dress rehearsal for the moon landing, where Stafford achieved the first lunar orbital rendezvous in history. Accompanying Stafford would be Command Module Pilot Vance Brand. Recruited to the Astronaut Corps in 1966, Brand had never been to space before at this point, but he too had quite a bit of experience. He had served as CAPCOM during parts of the Apollo 13 mission. He had also served on multiple Apollo backup crews and would have been slated to be on the prime crew for Apollo 18 until that mission was canceled. Originally, however, the command module pilot was supposed to be Jack Swigert. But after the postal cover scandal of Apollo 15, Swigert was removed from future missions. The third and final member of the Apollo crew would serve as the docking module pilot. For this role, Deke Slayton chose none other than himself. Recruited as one of the Mercury 7 way back in 1959, Slayton had been grounded after doctors discovered a minor heart issue. As a result, he had never been to space. But now, over 10 years after his recruitment, Slayton decided it was time for him to go to space, on the very last of the Apollo missions. He would become the oldest person to go to space at the time. On the Soviet side, the Soviet Union selected Alexei Leonov and Valery Kubasov. The Soviet side of the mission would only have two cosmonauts. After the Soyuz 11 accident, mission rules dictated that the cosmonauts were to wear pressure suits during sensitive portions of the mission, such as docking and re-entry. With spacesuits on, the Soyuz could only carry two rather than three cosmonauts. Both Leonov and Kubasov were space veterans. Leonov had flown on Voshod 2 and had become the first person ever to conduct a spacewalk. Kubasov had flown on Soyuz 6 during the triple flight of Soyuz 6, 7, and 8. Kubasov's Soyuz 6 was the one that carried the Vulcan welding experiment, which nearly burned a hole in the side of the spacecraft. Leonov and Kubasov had also worked together before as the original prime crew for the ill-fated Soyuz 11. Kubasov was the one who got him and his crewmates, including Leonov, grounded after doctors detected an inflamed lung and suspected he had tuberculosis. This error in diagnosis had saved Kubasov and Leonov's lives. On July 15, 1975, the Apollo-Soyuz test project mission began. This marks the last time that a Saturn rocket, in this case a Saturn 1B, was ever launched. The Apollo spacecraft and the Soyuz spacecraft launched within 8 hours of each other, though the two would not actually dock until July 17th. For this mission, the Apollo spacecraft was simply referred to as Apollo, though some unofficially dubbed it Apollo 18. The Soyuz spacecraft was meanwhile officially designated Soyuz 19. After docking on July 17th, the two sides prepared to broadcast the historic moment when astronauts and cosmonauts would meet in space. Although the docking had been achieved, it took 3 hours before the crews could actually greet each other, since each side had to not only prepare for the moment, but they also had to wait for the pressure to change in the airlock. The plan was for the astronauts to visit the Soyuz first. When they were ready, Stafford opened the airlock hatch, where he saw Leonov and Kubasov on the other side. There was a bit of an awkward moment as Stafford and Leonov exchanged initial greetings. You see, Leonov was outside the view of the camera inside the airlock. Stafford wanted to make sure that Leonov and their planned handshake were in full view of the camera for everyone watching back on Earth. Stafford had to ask Leonov to please come forward toward the docking tunnel. Stafford then gave a very direct look at the camera to make sure there was a clear line of sight, and then he reached out. Leonov and Stafford then shook hands. The astronauts and cosmonauts proceeded to exchange gifts and flags, and later Leonov and Kubasov visited the Apollo spacecraft. Throughout the mission, the astronauts also made a point of trying to speak Russian, while the Soviets made a point of trying to speak English. Apollo and Soyuz remained docked for 44 hours before they separated. They then performed joint scientific activities, with Apollo maneuvering to block the sun to form an artificial solar eclipse, while Leonov and Kubasov on Soyuz took pictures of the sun's corona. After this, the two spacecraft docked again briefly before going their separate ways. Soyuz 19 remained in orbit for two more days, conducting its own activities, while Apollo stayed in orbit for five more days. The only serious problem to emerge during this mission was during Apollo's re-entry. One of the thrusters on the command module had accidentally been left on during descent. Since the thrusters use hypergolic propellants, meaning they burn on their own without mixing with anything else, the thruster was releasing exhaust as long as it was on. This would have been fine, except after Apollo re-entered the atmosphere, the cabin air intake valve opened. Suddenly, the toxic fumes from the thruster were entering the cabin. The situation was actually so serious that Vance Brand lost consciousness. Stafford managed to get his hands on an emergency oxygen mask and handed one to Slayton, and they also put one on Brand. After splashing down, the three astronauts were hospitalized for 2 weeks to ensure that they properly recovered. The Apollo-Soyuz test project is a mission that has had lasting consequences, in some cases more so than some of the moon landing missions. The development of the androgynous docking unit led to derivative designs that were eventually used when the US space shuttle docked with the Soviet Union's Mir space station. A version of the androgynous docking unit is also used on the International Space Station today. And in many ways, the Apollo-Soyuz test project was a test to determine whether there was a capability to create the International Space Station in the first place. The respective commanders of the mission, Leonov and Stafford, also apparently became genuine friends. After the Apollo-Soyuz mission, they continued to communicate with one another on a regular basis. And later, when Stafford and his wife adopted two Russian orphans, Leonov became the children's godfather. In October 2019, after Leonov passed away, Stafford gave a eulogy at his funeral. And on this note, we come to an end of the A History of the Space Race podcast. I wanted to end here with this epilogue about cooperation rather than my previous episode about a test of the system. Because no matter what system we are talking about, the Apollo-Soyuz test project was a demonstration of greater things that can be achieved through cooperation rather than competition. And I do hope that there is more cooperation in space than competition. For as President Kennedy said in 1963 during his American University speech,
"For in the final analysis, our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's futures. And we are all mortal."
Thank you so much for listening. I hope everyone who made it this far has had as much joy listening to the podcast as I have had making it.